Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Thursday, January 19th, 2023. We are ready to begin oral argument in the fourth case on our calendar for oral argument. It is the matter of Lewis versus Lewis. Counsel, you will have 15 minutes to present your argument. It's important that you begin by stating your name and identifying the party you represent. We are making an audio recording of this proceeding, but that is the only recording that is permitted under the court rules. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Jim McGeaney, and I represent the appellant Craig Lewis in this matter, which is an appeal from an extension, a second extension of a harassment restraining order. I note that the respondent didn't file a brief and is not here to present argument. I will cut straight to the chase for this panel and raise the sole issue I believe that's before this court is whether or not a district court judge can grant an extension of a harassment restraining order on the basis of I'll call them petitioner in the harassment matter, on a petitioner's assertion, absent anything else, that they continue to be reasonably in fear of the respondent of that harassment order. In this case, the district court judge said quite clearly that she believes she can extend the order based on the petitioner's say-so, the fact that they assert that they continue to be in reasonable fear, without any evidence that establishes the reasonableness. And it's our position, it's appellant's position, that that's erroneous. That allows a petitioner in any harassment restraining order matter to continue to extend the harassment restraining order by merely filing an affidavit with the court and saying, I continue to be reasonably in fear of the respondent. Basically,
but here, Mr. McGeaney, I mean, to be fair, the district court did conduct an evidentiary hearing and so it wasn't just an affidavit filed with the court. And as I review the transcript, the respondent did testify that she was afraid and then also provided testimony about some of the circumstances, some of the context over the years that led to her having that fear. Why isn't that sufficient evidence? I mean, I'm not saying that any other court would reach the same determination, but why wasn't that sufficient evidence for the district court to make the decision that it had the discretion to make?
Well, I suppose if the testimony had some recency to it, or some information that would lead the fact finder to believe that the threat of physical harm would continue, maybe. But if you read the respondent's testimony, it's somewhat disjointed. She's talking about she just wants to pay her bills. She wants to be left alone. She doesn't really say she's reasonably afraid until prompted by the district court. And again, that was the evidence that was available for the original initial grant of the harassment restraining order. The district court and the respondent agreed that the appellant here had not been in contact with her for more than 4 years, had complied.
But the fact that there was no violation of the existing OFP, I mean, that isn't enough to defeat an extension, is it? I mean, the statute provides that as an alternative basis to extend an OFP, right?
I agree. A violation would be grounds to extend the order for protection. The real question before this court, I believe, is what is reasonable fear? Is the continued assertion that I continue to be afraid based on the facts that led to the initial harassment order, I continue to be afraid. Is that enough to continue to extend or grant continuous extensions? This is the second time. My client didn't appeal the first grant. It was a similar hearing. You have the transcript in the record. There was no allegations of any behaviors and there continues to be no allegation of behaviors that caused the respondent to continue to be reasonably in fear. It's our assertion, and I can't find a case in Minnesota on this point, but it's our assertion that for a petitioner in a harassment order matter to continue to extend an order over and over again, they have to have some kind of basis to say that they continue to be in reasonable fear, especially in circumstances where I talked a little bit in my brief about this. The purpose of the original HROs have been satisfied. The respondent, my client appellant, has complied with the orders. He's not been in contact with the respondent in this case. And in fact, her testimony reveals that she's actually not in reasonable fear of bodily harm. 2 years into her applications for an extension, she goes to their father's funeral and sat right next to my client. That's not the behavior of someone who's reasonably in fear of bodily harm from somebody.
And I know you advanced that argument in the district court. And I think that respondent testified it was the only seat available or something like that. I mean, it seems like you're asking us to substitute our judgment for and our ability to weigh the credibility of competing evidence. Isn't that something for the district court to do?
Well, I would think so. I don't think the district court did it in this case. The district court, it's on page 19 of the transcript. The district court basically says, in general, Ms. Lewis can indicate if she remains in reasonable fear, and that's enough to grant the extension. And we're here to argue that that's not enough. That merely asserting that you are reasonably in fear without some kind of corroborating evidence besides the prior conduct that led to the harassment order, that you need to be able to point to something that supports that you continue to be reasonably fearful to grant another extension. This type of holding, the district court, basically this person gets an HRO in perpetuity. They can just every 2 years say, I continue to be fearful. I want this extended. You know, the cases cited that I know they're outside Minnesota jurisdiction, I think are on point, and I think that are a more applicable analysis that you need. If you're going to claim that you are reasonably in fear of a person from a prior HRO, you need to be able to say why you continue to be reasonably feared, besides the fact that you got these orders 4 years ago in a case.
Why isn't the testimony about sort of the decades long, course of conduct by our client sufficient corroborative evidence to support the respondent's testimony that she was still afraid of him?
Well, because the decades-long behavior isn't abusive. She's complaining about my client suing her in civil court over property dispute. She's complaining about my client going to visit another family member in another state in a property that she claims she had ownership interest was. She doesn't even assert that she was even there. She's just mad that he went out to those people's homes when she didn't want him to, because she's a part owner of that other family property in that other state. Can't recall the state offhand, but it's not the type of decades long abuse or physical or threatening behaviors that are typically heard in a hearing like this. She's complaining about him ganging up on her with the other family members regarding family disputes. She makes some obscure reference to a 30-year-old sexual assault that never came up before in the life of this case, by the way. And I don't think the district court gave that much credibility. It wasn't mentioned in her findings or her order. But other than that, the kind of behaviors that respondent is complaining about in both her affidavit and in her testimony are not really harassment. They're not the kind of harassment that would ordinarily give rise to a harassment restraining order.
But can't repeated litigation and turning other family members against somebody, I mean, that can cause fear, can't it? Does it have to be physical harm that you're afraid of?
Well, the statute requires fear of physical harm in order to grant the extension. And I think it's well established that initiating litigation and asserting your property rights or other legal avenues are not harassment. They can't be considered harassment under the harassment statute. So it may cause someone fear of economic insecurity, but that's not harassment either.
But given the fact that he's been under an OFP for now 4 years, I guess. Original 2 years, extended 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that this other activity is occurring with the OFPs in place, I mean, doesn't that, why isn't that corroborative evidence that had, but for the OFPs, there would be physical harm occur?
Well, I don't know that any of these activities were occurring while the OFPs were in place. These were the activities that were litigated in the initial OFP. She's not asserted any activity since 2018. The lawsuits and the alleged flying drones over her property to assert the property disputes, those were all part of the initial complaint back in 2018. The respondent acknowledged that she's had no dealings with my client since the initial HRO, other than the visit to the father at the hospital during the COVID pandemic, where my client merely called the room because he wasn't allowed to be in the room together. And then the funeral where she came and sat right next to him. That's the only interaction that these two people have had since the original HRO was put in place. Her allegations in the first extension and in this extension are just a rehash of her original complaints. And again, you know, you read her complaints, both in the affidavit and in the testimony, are more kind of generalized. I want to be left alone. I don't, you know, she complains about my client not coming over in time to fix her mechanism, whatever she was complaining about. It's not typical behavior that is reasonable, that would reasonably cause someone to be afraid of physical harm. And that's the really, right? The test is what is putting her in reasonable fear of bodily harm. And again, it's our assertion that there needs to be something demonstrated for an extension. The purpose of the original HRO has been satisfied. He's not having contact with her. Really, the only thing granting these extensions of the HRO really accomplished for the petitioner is to put her in a position to have my client arrested should she assert that he violates it. Because as this court knows, an allegation of an HRO violation gives police probable cause up to 72 hours after to immediately arrest you. So it's a control thing. It gives her the control, the ability to have the appellant arrested. Now, it's not happened yet, but what other purpose is there really to continuing to extend this HRO? The purpose of the HRO has been accomplished. Mr. Lewis hasn't talked to his sister in more than 4 years. No contact with her, doesn't see her. Again, two incidental contacts through traumatic family events, a funeral and a hospitalization. And she felt comfortable going to sit next to him. Well, I appreciate it was the only seat available at the funeral, maybe. Even the fact that she felt comfortable enough to go sit next to him, that disputes any allegation that she's reasonably in fear of bodily harm from him, especially when the behaviors that she's complaining about are mostly benign. Filing an action in district court to assert a property line, going to visit other family members when she's not present, and not being responsive enough to her requests of him when they were having contact. It's kind of, her allegations are somewhat strange that she's claiming a harassment in the original affidavits and in this one, and not the typical kind of behavior that, in my experience, a district court judge or referee would even grant the ex parte HRO, but granted that they were issued here. But I think the district court was clear.
Well, to be fair, the underlying OFP followed physical abuse, physical harm, correct?
An allegation of physical harm. Well, I think it was disputed.
That was believed.
Correct. Yeah, it was. And you know, one of the complaints in the extensions is that he didn't plead guilty, that he negotiated a resolution, his criminal file. That's one of her complaints that she's claiming is acts of harassment, that he wouldn't plead guilty to an allegation that he claimed he wasn't guilty of. So, but again, I think the district court's language in the order is you don't need to demonstrate any additional reason for the reasonableness of your fear, that the reasonableness can be established based on the existence of the HRO itself and the allegations that you made previously to obtain the HRO. I think that's not fair to a respondent. There needs to be, and I'd ask the court to look at the case law from Ohio that we cited in Indiana, where those Supreme Courts held that you need to demonstrate something in addition, something else that makes the fear reasonable. And that's the question here. The fear is not reasonable. And I see I'm out of time.
Does not look like there are any more questions from the panel. So thank you, Mr. McGeady. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have to add, I'm grateful to be able to come on Zoom today. We got about 8 inches of snow outside our house this morning.
Oh, boy. Well, it looked a little bit like a snow globe here in St. Paul as well. So we were